Welcome to video four of 1B Structures. We're now still talking about torsion, but now instead of talking about equilibrium relationships, which is what we developed in a previous section, we're now going to be looking at the stiffness of a cross-section in terms of torsion and how much it twists, in other words. So for general sections, this is going to be difficult because the cross-sections will warp, and I'll give you an example of that in a second. But we're going to start with a simple thin-walled circular cylinder because that's nice and easy. There are no warping effects. Okay, so let's start with a thin-walled cylinder. We're going to start with a thickness T, radius R, length L, fixed base cylinder with a torque T applied to it at the top surface, which you will show on the next page. What is the resultant rotation theta? Or, much better, what is the resultant twist per unit length phi? These are defined on the next page. So here we have that circular cylinder, thin-walled, with the twist T occurring, the torque T occurring around the top. And notice that if you start at that point over there, when that cylinder twists, that point will move to there. And that is undergoing an angle theta in the cross-section with a radius R. And it's undergoing a twist phi, sorry, gamma, I beg your pardon, over a length L, in the when the cylinder is viewed from the side. In other words, if we look at the top from there to there, we know that R times theta is equal to gamma multiplied by L. So that's what's written on the next page in the second position. So gamma times L is equal to theta times R, which drops out directly from geometry. We also already know from a previous section that the shear stress is given by the torque T divided by 2 pi r squared T. So now let's redefine this theta divided by L, because theta divided by L we are going to call phi, and that is the twist per unit length. That's a very useful measure for us, twist per unit length, and it doesn't matter how long the structure is in terms of overall twist. And we also know from the material law, of course, that the shear stress tau is equal to G shear modulus multiplied by gamma. Okay, so if we plug back in to that equation we just had at the bottom of the previous page, that the shear stress tau is equal to G times gamma, we can plug in the equations we had in the previous page, and we discover that the torque T is equal to this thing here. Please remember this equation. I'm going to refer back to this. This is at the bottom of page 28 of your notes. I'm going to refer back to that equation a little bit later in this video. Okay, so the torsional rigidity or torsional stiffness T divided by phi, that's what we're going to define. That's torsional rigidity. T divided by phi is just given by that part of the equation there. And the shear stress, of course, is given by G times R phi, which we know to be constant in the cross-section. Right, moving on. We're now going to come on to a general thin walled section. So this is now not circular. This is a general in shape. And this is a structure, of course, which is being twisted like that. So we're twisting it like that, undergoes a torque T, and it will, of course, twist by theta. So we have already mentioned that these structures will warp. They do warp. What I would like you to do is to go onto the mezzanine floor in Inglis Building, go and play with some of those torsion models which exist. Please spend time playing. It's very important that you understand how torsion really does affect structures. Nevertheless, we're going to apply virtual work to this system, even though we know it will warp. We're going to apply virtual work to it in order to work out the compatibility relationships, which will give us the amount of twist in these sorts of structures. Okay, we already have the equilibrium relationship. The Q, the shear flow, is tau times T, which is T over 2 times the enclosed area. We've already discovered that. For virtual work to apply, we need to have our equilibrium set, which is the torque T in equilibrium with shear stress, and the compatible set, which is the rotation theta, which is compatible with the shear strain gamma. And for the external work, of course, well, that's simply given by the torque multiplied by the rotation theta. That's easy enough. So what we're now going to do is look at a little piece of material which undergoes some shear stress tau to discover what the internal work is in such a structure. So applying the principles of virtual work, that shear stress tor after this material has deformed into this shape will have a shear stress tor acting on it. That is the stress which does work. So we'll work it out on this page. I'll show you the equation on the next page. The force which is being applied on the right-hand face here will be the shear stress tor multiplied by its area. The area is B multiplied by C. So tor times B times C is the force applied upwards on that face acting over there. And it has moved through a distance, a vertical upwards distance, which is going to be given by gamma multiplied by the length of the block, A. So it's going to be the force multiplied by the distance, which is tor times the area BC multiplied by gamma A, that's the vertical displacement upwards. And we can rewrite that because A times B times C is simply the volume of that little block. So we have tor times gamma times the volume of that block. Now, let's apply that to something a bit more real. Here we have a cross-section of a rectangular hollow cross-section. And we're going to move around the block until we get to any random spot. So that distance moving around the block is S. And we then call the height of this little strip, which we're going to look at, we'll call that delta S. And if we say that there's going to be a shear stress tor acting, as it were, upwards on that little block, it's analogous to the previous page, where we had that little block with a shear stress acting on it. And so what is the volume now of this material? Because remember, we had shear times gamma times the volume of that material. So what is the volume of that block? The volume of that block is L times the thickness times ds, delta S in this case. So that's what the that's what the volume of that material is. So if we know that, then we can say that the small amount of work which is done on that block is simply going to be the shear stress multiplied by gamma multiplied by the volume. So we had this result from a couple of pages back, shear times gamma multiplied by the volume of that material. Now, remember, or note, I should say, gamma, T, and tor, they can all vary around the cross-section. And so if we want to sum up the total internal work from a virtual work perspective, we need to sum this all up over the cross-section of tor times gamma times L times T ds. If we do that, we need to remember that tor multiplied by T is the shear flow. That is a constant. We've proved that in previous notes. So tor times T is a constant. That can come out. The length, of course, is a constant. That can come out. And we get left with the work across the entire cross-section of Q times L multiplied by the integral of gamma S ds. And, of course, that must equal, from the virtual work perspective, the internal work must equal the external work, which is T times gamma. So T times gamma is equal to that thing on the right-hand side. So we can now use this to find what the correct compatibility relationships, because if we multiply, let me bring that original one back, if we multiply both sides of these this equation by 2 times the enclosed area, remember 2 times the enclosed area times Q will be T, then we will end up with this equation. So twice the enclosed area multiplied by theta is equal to L times that integral. And we can simply rewrite that as that, because theta divided by L is phi. So we can rewrite that down, and we end up with this equation here. So the equilibrium and stress-strain relationships, they are straightforward. For equilibrium, we know that Q is given by T divided by 2AE. We've discovered that previously. But Q is also equal to the shear stress multiplied by the thickness. Shear stress is G times gamma, and the thickness is thickness. So these two relationships, these two equations can be put equal to each other, which we do on the next page. And that tells us that the shear strain gamma is given by this thing. We can now substitute this gamma back into the equation that we had a couple of pages back. That equation which we had there, we can plug this back in. Oh, I should use this one rather, shouldn't I? We can plug this back into this integral equation, and we end up with this thing, which looks rather scary. In fact, it's not. So, and I'll show you how we use this in a second. Only T varies around the section. Everything else is a constant. So the torsional stiffness is given by, we can very much simplify this thing. It's given by that equation, because the only thing which really does vary is little T. And even that one looks slightly scary to apply in reality. Actually, it's a terribly simple thing to apply this equation to any cross-section. So now, what I would like you to look at is this. What we actually have here is T is equal to G multiplied by that thing, 4AE squared divided by that integral, which we will call J. We will call that the torsion constant J, multiplied by phi on the right-hand side. So T is equal to GJ multiplied by phi. That's very similar to the bending moment equaling EI multiplied by kappa, the curvature. So it's very very similar to the bending formula that we developed in year one, this time for torsion. Let's stop there for a second and just think about what we've discovered. What we've discovered, let me go back and show you that equation again. What we've discovered is that the stiffness of the material, GJ, the torsion stiffness denoted as GJ, that stiffness GJ is dependent on the enclosed area squared of cross-section. So here we have three cross-sections, and everyone is similar in one way. They all have the same perimeter of material, and they all have the same thickness of material. Each one has a perimeter which is 16 units long. Okay, so 4 plus 4 plus 4 plus 4, 1 plus 7 plus 1 plus 7, and that, take my word for it, has a perimeter of 16. The relative enclosed area of each one, that enclosed area is 20.4 units squared, that one's 16 and that one's 7, but the relative stiffness we know is to that squared. So if I call that one 1, then 16 divided by 20.4 all squared is 0.62, 7 divided by 20.4 all squared is 0.12, which tells us that this cross-section, even though it has the same amount of material as this cross-section, is about 8 times stiffer when it comes to torsional effects. That is what that equation on the previous page is telling us. So let's end with a case study. We'll go back to the case study that we've been using, which is the Storbelt approach span bridge. Let's have a look at the cross-section again, just to remind us of what it looks like. So we've got a very long top flange, 25.1 meters, bottom flange and two webs. We've also put in brackets, we've also put the thicknesses of each of the wall thickness all the way around. Now, in this particular case, because we're dealing with torsion, the torsion will be dominated by the actual thickness of the material. So we're not going to worry about the stiffness, we're not going to worry about the smeared thicknesses, because the stiffness between stiffness is the bit which is going to be particularly important to us. And so what we need to discover from that little equation that we developed previously, and I'll bring it back up just to remind you, we have that equation, and we need to discover as part of it what the integral of ds by ts is. What we're going to do is we're going to call each part of the cross section, the top flange, the bottom flange, and the two webs, we'll call each of those lengths ds and divide them by the thickness. In other words, this is a very easy calculation to do. So what we do is ds by t divided by t is the top flange length divided by its thickness, plus the two web lengths divided by its thickness, their thicknesses, plus the bottom flange divided by its thickness. So the top flange, the two webs, the bottom flange, you can add those three numbers together because it's an integral, and you come up with a number 4426. It's dimensionless because ds by t is a dimensionless concept. Remember that g for steel is about 81 times 10 to the 9 newtons per square meter. So we have that number 4426. So we can plug that into this equation that we have, and we will discover that T divided by phi is 1.07 times 10 to the 12 newton meters divided by radians per meter. That's telling us what the stiffness, the torsional stiffness is of that cross section. So the torsion constant J, which is that 4AE squared divided by the integral, we can work out, and that's 13.2 square meters. And if we wanted to, at any point, we now know what, if we know what the torque is being applied to the cross-section, We know what G is, we know what J is, it's 13.2 metres to the 4. We can work out what the twist per unit length is at any point on the cross-section. And that's the beauty of that equation. It now tells us the stiffness. So, let's go back to axisymmetric shafts, because what I want to show you is that we can extend this into solid cross-sections, not just circular hollow. So, what we're going to do is, if you want to have a look at a section which is far more solid than we've looked at before, all we do is we consider it to be made up of a whole series of concentric circles, one of which will give us a delta T contribution towards the overall torque being applied to that. So that's how we deal with it. And in terms of mathematics, we deal with it by saying that we have all these concentric circles, each has a radius R, and it has a wall thickness, which is delta R. So instead of using little t, we're now going to use delta R, and we're going to sum up, in other words, we're going to integrate all of the contributions from all of these concentric circles so that we have the total torque being applied to that cross-section. Remember I said to you earlier, we were going to come back to that equation. In the original equation at the bottom of page 28, delta R is a little t, but now it's a delta R, and of course delta T is no longer T, it's delta T, because it's just a little contribution from one of the concentric circles. To cut a long story short, we integrate that. It's a very simple integration to do, and we find that bottom equation there, where T is equal to G times J times phi on that side. And so the value of J, take my word for it, is also the polar second moment of area. In this particular case, the integral of R squared dA. You can do that sum for yourself. So, stress due to torque for the thin shell, tau is equal to G times R times phi. That's near the top of page 29, which we were talking about before. If we develop that equation, develop that concept, we can show that tau over R is equal to G phi is equal to T divided by J. And you should remember from first year work, 1A structures, that for bending, sigma over y equals e times kappa, the curvature, which is equal to m over I. These two equations look very similar. They have been derived in completely different ways, and yet, miraculously, they're very similar in outlook. That's that's one of those strange oddities about structural engineering, a wonderful result. So at this point, you are able to try questions 8 and 9 on example sheet 2.1.